Inside Florida Politics, the essential podcast powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett. And if I sound a little different today, it's because I'm not in the tastefully lighted and partially acoustically baffled studio in West Palm Beach where I normally do the podcast. But today, historic day for the podcast, I am in Sarasota with Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor Zach Anderson.
Welcome, George. Great to see you live and in person.
This is a momentous time for the podcast that we're both here in the studio. And then also, as always, from Tallahassee, the boss with the gravitas, the Tallahassee State Capitol Bureau Chief for Gatehouse, John Kennedy, is with us.
Hello, George and Zach. I guess I did not get the invite to Sarasota.
It's very nice here in the studio. Let's get rolling here. We are, you know, kind of there's kind of a Homeric or Shakespearean quality to the podcast in that it's very timeless, but it's also we do these actually at a very specific point in time as well. And we are today recording on Thursday, 5 days before Election Day. The reason I'm here in Sarasota, I know a lot of people are probably wondering why that is. I was over in this part of the state for a Donald Trump rally last night in the Fort Myers area. And Donald Trump is one way I can think of that Donald Trump is just like Barack Obama is last night, just as Obama did in 2010 and 2014, Donald Trump told an audience that this election is about him and his agenda. And Joe Forzano is going to, or Thomas Cordy, is going to cue up a clip of the president in Fort Myers at a rally for Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis.
But everything we have achieved, and it's monumental, is at stake in this election. Democrats want to erase our prosperity and reverse our progress. In less than 1 week, Americans will go to the polls in one of the most important elections of our entire lives. Although I will say, not as important as 2016. But I'd like to say, but not really.
Okay, so there's President Trump saying, on the one hand, like every president says in a midterm, that even though he's not on the ballot, that his agenda certainly is in this election. So, yeah, he was ostensibly there for Rick Scott for Senate and Ron DeSantis for governor, but really he was there very much for himself. And I also like, you know, every politician always says that whatever election they're running in is the most important election ever. But Trump could not quite bring himself to say that, had to bring up the 2016 example. What'd you think of that, Zach?
Well, it's classic Trump. I mean, and he's right. This election is all about him in a lot of ways. You know, this is really a referendum on his presidency to a large degree, and whether or not you know, Democrats have the energy to push back and try and put a check on him, or if his supporters are going to rally around him and support him. And that's where he was yesterday. He went to where the heart of his support is here in Florida to try and rally the troops.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit more about why he was there and why he's going to the Panhandle on Saturday. And I do. He did throw in a few Florida notes, we have a clip of him talking about the Senate race, where Rick Scott is running against Bill Nelson. We're going to play that clip, and then we'll play a clip of his take on the governor's race, where Ron DeSantis is running against Democrat Andrew Gillum. So let's roll those two clips.
Rick is running against far left Democrat Bill Nelson. You know that. A vote for Bill Nelson is a vote for Chuck Schumer. Remember this, Chuck Schumer, and they want to enact the radical agenda of Nancy Pelosi.
Let's hear his take on the governor's race.
Ron is running against a radical socialist who wants to turn Florida, frankly, into Venezuela. Get used to it. That's what's going to happen, too. Andrew Gillum wants to take a wrecking ball to one of the most successful economies anywhere in the world, the Florida economy, with massive tax hikes, crippling regulations, and a socialist healthcare takeover that would destroy your state.
There you go. Some pretty red meat rhetoric in a pretty red part of Florida. And we will talk about why was he there? The Florida is a big state. There's 10 media markets. Why did he choose to go there? We'll talk about that in a minute. But first, I believe I hear some kind of funky royalty-free music playing. What does that music mean?
Pick a number segment, George.
That is exactly right. Listeners to the podcast know when you hear that music, it's time for pick a number. That's the claimed segment where we each of us puts forward a number, or at least two of us are going to put forward a number. And then at the end of the podcast, we will explain what it means in Florida politics. John Kennedy, let's go to you first. What number have you brought for us today?
George, the number I've chosen is 229.
Okay. 229 for John Kennedy. Zach Anderson, are you going to participate this week?
I am. I totally forgot about this, but, you know, there's so many numbers floating out there. It wasn't hard to grab one. And I'm going to go with 51.
51 for Zach Anderson. Okay. And my number, George Bennett, that's me, my number is going to be the number 4. So if you are taking notes, and we always do encourage that. In fact, this podcast, we encourage you to take notes during the pick a number segment if you're not driving a car or operating heavy machinery. And you're going to want to keep your pen or pencil out for the entire podcast, because this is going to be, there's going to be a lot of interesting nuggets coming up here. But for this segment, if you're taking notes, George Bennett, that's me, I had a 4. Zach Anderson had a 51, and John Kennedy, the curve buster again, with a 229. You want to hang on to the very end of the podcast and see what those numbers mean in Florida politics. But let's get to our loaded lineup. So this is our last podcast before Tuesday's elections, and next week we will have the special post-election hindsight edition of the podcast. But here in our last podcast before the election, I thought we would talk about some things to watch, some keys for the election. And if you're a casual observer or more into it, but just what things to look for on Tuesday, kind of signals of whether Republicans or Democrats are doing well. So first of all, I mentioned just geography. Donald Trump was in Southwest Florida. This is a very red part of the state, and Zach Anderson, you're more familiar with this turf. Tell us a little bit about why Trump was here, and what should voters look for? What does Southwest Florida need to do for Republicans, I guess, in Tuesday's election?
Yeah, there's a good reason why Trump was in Southwest Florida. This is critical to Republicans' prospects for winning here. This is a deep red part of the state. The county where Trump was speaking, Lee County, went 20 points, more than 20 points for Trump in 2016. Collier County, Charlotte County, also went more than 20 points for Trump in 2016. And then here in Sarasota County and in Manatee County, double digits for Trump. So they want to bump up those margins and really drive turnout in the Republican areas. This has been said before, but this is really a base election. The two sides are not really trying to speak to that centrist voter. They're trying to get their voters out to the polls. Obama's going to be here to fire up the Democrats. Bernie Sanders is in the state firing up the Democrats, and Trump is just trying to overwhelm them by getting more Republicans and Republican-leaning voters out to the polls. So, you know, his message plays well in Southwest Florida. He's really focused on immigration in the closing stretch. You know, the counties around here are very, very white. You have, you know, Charlotte County, 88% of the voters are white. Here in Sarasota County, 87%. Down where Trump was speaking in Lee County, 79%. So, you know, there is concern there, I think, about the changing demographics of America, and the immigration issue plays well there. Trump really racked up the score in Southwest Florida. He got 60,000 votes more, a 60,000 higher margin than even Mitt Romney did in 2012. So I think we'll be watching the margins here and to see how much he can bump up the vote in this area.
So that margin, what was that margin? And that was for what, like five counties you're talking about?
Yeah, for the five counties that south of Tampa Bay, Sarasota, Manatee, Charlotte, Lee, and Collier, which are all very retiree heavy. A lot of white retirees from the Midwest where, you know, you have people who are very receptive to Trump's message, to the concerns about deindustrialization. They might have come from a factory town in Ohio or Michigan that, you know, the factory has moved away and they're very concerned about jobs going overseas. And, you know, the changing demographics of their community are also an issue for a lot of folks. So I think that, you know, the two things that Trump is focused on, immigration and trade, really play well here.
And do you have there, how much did he win those? What was his margin for those counties? Do you have that by any chance?
He won the counties. Let's see. He won the counties by 195,000 votes in those five counties. And that was 59,615 votes higher than Romney's margin of victory in 2012.
So in a so Trump won this area by, say, 195,000 votes. Now, that was in a presidential election, much higher turnout than the midterm.
Right.
But just to give you a sense of the scale. So, in other words, on election night, Ron DeSantis, the candidate for governor, the Republican, and Governor Rick Scott, who's running for Senate, they need to not just win these counties, but win them by a lot. Now, I don't, if they win them by a Trumpian margin, then it's going to be a blowout, but in a midterm, but they're not going to be that high. But just to give you a sense of the scale, when you're looking at the returns on Tuesday from these Southwest Florida counties, it's not enough for them to, for the Republicans to win them. They got to win them big. They got to run up the score. Okay. So similarly, so that explains why Trump was in Fort Myers on Wednesday night. And then he's coming back to the state on Saturday. He's going to Pensacola, another deep red part of Florida. John Kennedy, give us a little scouting report on the panhandle and what to expect there.
Well, the panhandle is another very reliably Republican part of Florida, but, you know, a large swath of the panhandle is still recovering from last month's Hurricane Matthew. But early signs so far are that voting is proceeding at a surprisingly normal pace. That's amazing at how, you know, little has returned otherwise to normal in eight counties that were badly damaged. Still looking at some of the early returns and by mail returns, Bay County, which is home to Panama City and the biggest county hit so hard by the Category 4 storm, they reported that 21% of its 121,000 voters had cast ballots, either in person or by mail. That was through Halloween, and that was at a 2-to-1 pace favoring Republicans. Franklin County, also hard hit by the storm, had 26% already voting, and Jackson County, 20%. Those numbers aren't really that bad, considering statewide about 30% of voters have turned in ballots by the end of October. So these panhandle counties are really not that way off. But even a little downturn is going to hurt, and that's mostly going to hurt Republican candidates like Senate nominee Rick Scott and gubernatorial candidate Ron DeSantis. These counties are reliably red, always going for the Republican nominee. And Scott got about half of his roughly 64,000 vote margin of victory in 2014. That's where he got it, across those eight counties of the panhandle. Trump, you know, has also done very well across the panhandle. So it's no surprise that he's scheduled a Saturday night rally in Pensacola on the last weekend before the election, all intended to try to pump up turnout for Scott and DeSantis and Republicans in general. Trump had carried that larger panhandle, that's roughly 12 counties, including some counties like, you know, Escambia County, home of Pensacola, that was not so badly hit by the storm. Those counties Trump carried by an overwhelming 218,000 votes in 2016. So he can, you know, try to make some magic happen out there for Republicans.
Yeah, and I noticed the conservative group, the Florida Family Policy Council, headed by John Stemberger, in the last couple of days launched an initiative to send people to the panhandle to help hurricane victims, you know, give them, I think it said, give them a sandwich and a drink and a ride to the polls. So, you know, conservatives are definitely concerned about getting the getting voters out to the polls in the panhandle. And so that's another area. If you're a Republican, if you're looking at the returns, the Republicans on the ticket are going to win those areas, but it's a question of how much will they win them by. And so they need a big margin there to offset. And I'll just say very briefly, for example, so while Trump is going to Southwest Florida, was in Southwest Florida, and he's going to the Panhandle on Friday, former President Barack Obama will be in Miami. And South Florida is the three largest counties in Florida are Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. They're also very blue counties, and that's where Democrats always try to run up the score to offset their losses in the rest of the state. In 2012, I know Barack Obama carried those three counties by more than 500,000 votes, and Mitt Romney won the rest of the state by about 500,000. And so really, Obama's margin was largely dependent on winning big in South Florida. So that's kind of three key geographic areas to look at. Now, we've been mentioning every day the Florida Division of Elections puts out a report on returned mail ballots and in-person early voting turnout, and they break it down by party. Now, you don't know who those people voted for, but usually Republicans tend to vote for the Republican and Democrats tend to vote for the Democrat. So far, as we do this podcast here on the Thursday before the election, roughly 42% of the people who have voted so far have been Republicans, about 40% Democrats, which leaves. So if you figure each of those parties are going to hold most of their voters, that's, you know, a slight edge for Republicans. But then that leaves the question of there's another 18% of voters that are either no party or minor party. And how those folks break will be important. John Kennedy, you've looked a little bit at those figures, and what can you say about the no party and independent voters?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting number because you so much of the focus is on D versus R at this point, but you really have more than 600,000 NPA, non-party affiliated voters, had cast ballots with less than a week to go before Election Day. Now that was less than half of what registered Republicans and Democrats had cast, with Republicans holding, as usual, a lead, with the thinking being that Democrats tend to vote later and on Election Day itself. But these NPAs are turning out in fairly strong numbers. Just over 480,000 voted early or by mail in 2014. So those numbers are up, but all numbers are up this year, with almost 1.3 million voters added to the rolls over the past 4 years. But still, 58% of these no-party voters are considered younger voters, basically under the age of 50. They've been the focus of so many Democratic get-out-the-vote groups this year, and they also contend with the image of being sporadic, less committed voters. But recent polls show that these NPAs are going overwhelmingly for Nelson and Gillum. A University of North Florida poll had no-party voters for Gillum 56-31%, and for Nelson 53-36%. And similarly, a fairly recent Quinnipiac University poll, Nelson was up 60-38 over Scott among these voters, and Gillum was ahead of DeSantis, 57-39. So that's broadly, that means for every three voters that go to NPA voters that go to vote, two of them are voting for Democrats. While the Democratic versus Republican numbers are getting most of the attention right now, it would seem that, because again, this election is seen as purely a base election, who can best drive their base. The difference, and I think the margin of victory in the end, may be more likely to be found among these non-party voters.
It's worth pointing out, George, I think that based on the party numbers, that there's no evidence of a blue wave. There's been a lot of talk of a blue wave, but Republicans are coming out stronger than Democrats so far, and Democrats are really hanging their hat right now on these independent numbers that John talked about. Based on the polling, it looks like independents are breaking towards Democrats by significant margins. And if the election were to be today, they would really have to rely on that to overcome a stronger GOP turnout so far. And a lot of it is going to depend as well on what happens on Election Day. We don't know which party is going to have a stronger turnout on Election Day, but not a lot of evidence of a blue wave right now.
That's true. A couple things worth noting on the independent voters. overall in Florida voter registrations, about 27.5% of registered voters are not registered Democrat or Republican. Most of them are either no party or with some minor party. So a little more than a quarter of the electorate is nonpartisan. But so far, turnout wise, only about 18% of those turning out have been nonpartisans. A measure of the partisan intensity, at least so far, of this election. The other thing is, and I know those polls you cited, John, are you know, look good for Democrats. I know among Republicans, when you talk to you know, Republican number cruncher types, they all pretty much concede that they're going to lose the independent vote, and so the only question then is by how much. And you know, I think if they feel the Republican path to winning, a lot of folks you talk to is, you know, if you can keep the independent vote for the Democrats below the mid 50s, Republicans feel good about their chances. And so that's going to be a key. That's definitely going to be a key factor in the results. The other thing is, you know, we've talked a lot about how people now vote over several weeks. Election day as a single day is kind of doesn't exist anymore. It's a several week process. But election day still matters a lot. You know, in 2016 in Florida, Hillary Clinton was ahead heading into election day. But there was a big wave of Trump voters that turned out in Florida to tip the state to him. I know in the Democratic primary this year, Andrew Gillum was behind in early voting and mail voting heading into election day, but a big wave gave him the Democratic nomination. Now, the general election, much larger stage, but I think there's certainly a lot of optimism that a lot of minority voters and others are going to show up on election day for Gillum. On the other hand, talking to some Republicans, they feel that they still have a lot of their high propensity voters that have not voted yet. They feel that they have an advantage in that they have more of these reliable voters, you know, waiting for them. So they feel good about their election day chances. But that's, you know, in a way, we've kind of de-emphasized the actual election day, but it's gonna matter a lot.
And I think Republicans actually won. More Republicans turned out on election day in 2016. So, you know, there's no guarantee if Democrats are hoping that their low propensity voters come out on election day. You know, the Republicans have done well in the past at some of these elections. One more point on independent voters, George. You know, Trump, exit polls showed that Trump won independent voters in Florida in 2016. And they also show that Obama won independent voters. You know, it is probably a good sign for Democrats if independent voters are breaking towards them because they have tended to be a sign of who is going to win the election. And I also think that, you know, it seems you get the gut sense that a lot of this is about Trump, that some of them are turned off by the president. So if Democrats end up pulling this out and independents are key, it could very well be a Trump factor there.
Yeah, for sure. Trump said it's about Trump, so it must be. So another big factor then that, you know, Andrew Gillum, of course, is trying to become the first African-American governor in Florida history. And he benefited in the Democratic primary, confluence of factors, but certainly a strong black support for him in the Democratic primary. And he's banking on strong black support in the general election. And so I looked a little bit at the black turnout numbers in Florida. There's about 1.8 million registered black voters in Florida. And turnout among blacks in the 2008 presidential election, that was Barack Obama, first time on the ballot in Florida, 76% of black voters turned out for that election, which is actually the statewide overall turnout was 75. So black voters were more likely than other voters to turn out in 2008 for Obama. And then when Obama ran for reelection in 2012, in Florida, 72.3% of black voters turned out. Again, that was higher than the overall state average turnout that year of 71.5%. So the two times that Obama was on the top of the ballot, black voters in Florida overperformed the rest of voters in turnout. However, in 2016, Hillary Clinton, the black turnout percentage went down to 69%. And the overall turnout in Florida was about 74.5%. So if you know, a 5% difference in black turnout is
huge.
Yeah, it's, you know, probably 50,000 some votes. You know, Trump won by a little more than 100. It didn't make the difference, but it would have been a big factor. The other thing, though, is then in midterm elections, and this is, you know, not going to be a normal midterm for a lot of reasons, but in black turnout in 2010 in Florida was only 43% compared to 48.5% overall turnout for the state. And in 2014, black turnout really underperformed. It was only 41.5% in that election, and the statewide turnout was 50.5%. So in midterm elections, you know, black voters did not turn out in as nearly as high a numbers as they did for presidential, and they lagged behind whites and others in turnout for those midterms. Now, this midterm is going to be different. Even if you take out the Gillum factor, there just is a much more interest, and it seems a lot more nationalized than a midterm normally is. And then you have an African-American on the top of the ballot. So the question is, what is the black turnout going to be? I mean, there's I think the overall turnout for the last midterm was a little over 50%. Most people expect the overall turnout for this race to exceed that. And I would, black turnout, a lot of people are forecasting, will be above 50% of black voters, which is very significant for a midterm election, and, you know, would be a big factor in a state like Florida that's very close. Zach, you've looked at what are some other things to watch for, just in terms of the kind of racial ethnic breakdown of who shows up to vote?
Well, you know, there's this election to a large degree has been about race. There's a lot of racial tension in the election, and so I think there is quite an interest in how the different racial demographics turn out. You know, DeSantis famously started his campaign by going on TV and saying that he didn't want Gillum to monkey up the economy with his socialist policies. And that started a lot of back and forth about whether that was racist and whether there's been some racist overtones to the campaign here. There's other issues, too. The closing GOP message has largely been about immigration. That's what Trump has talked about, which obviously has a racial dimension. And then you have the first African-American potential governor. So there's a lot of, you know, racial dynamics to this election. You know, the black vote is going to be really interesting to watch. The Hispanic vote, when Trump is coming down here and talking about sending troops to the border and ending birthright citizenship, you know, that fires up his base. Does it also fire up Hispanic voters to come out and vote, you know, against him? Hispanic turnout right now is around 12% in terms of the overall makeup of early and absentee ballots. Hispanics make up 16.5% of the overall electorate. So they're only 12% of early and absentee. They're not, you know, voting in as high as numbers in terms of their percentage of registered voters. Whereas white voters make up 67% of the electorate in Florida, but they make up 72% of folks who have voted early or absentee. So white voters right now are outperforming their voter registration, and Hispanic voters are underperforming their voter registration. You see, like, you know, where Trump was down in Lee County, voter turnout is already at 40%. You know, that there's a lot of intensity right now, and it seems like but the white vote has come out stronger than some of the minority vote at this point.
Definitely. I think you said 67%. I think the white percentage is 63%. But either way, whites are definitely, so far, whites are overperforming, you know, in terms of the votes that have been cast before the election. But then again, as we said, you know, there's an expectation that, especially among black voters, that more of them will vote on election day itself. So but that's, you know, again, that's another thing to look at. A couple other things to keep an eye on as you're watching. Now, you know, some of this stuff involves some sophisticated numbers crunching that won't be available Tuesday night. But if you're just watching the returns on Tuesday, a couple of counties to kind of keep an eye on that are there really isn't much of a bellwether county for Florida. Florida is such a large, diverse state that there isn't like one county that kind of typifies the state. Although I looked back at the last five elections in Florida, going back to the 2008 presidential. Over the last five elections, most of the counties in Florida are either very red or very blue. And so Democrats won two of those elections, Republicans won three. And so most of the counties line up that way. One exception is Monroe County, which is the Florida Keys, which is, you know, kind of almost like its own country and not really typical of anything. But Monroe County has picked the winner in four of the last five elections in Florida. They went for Obama in 2008. They voted for Rick Scott in 2010 governor's race. They voted for Obama again in 2012. The only time they did not pick the winner was in the 2014 governor's race. They voted for Charlie Crist. And then in 2016, Donald Trump carried Monroe County. So Monroe County has a better track record than anybody else in the state for so if you're watching the Monroe turns in the Senate race and the governor's race, there's a good chance they might be the ones to pick the winner. Another thing to look at is two counties that St. Lucie County, which is a very Democratic county and has voted Democrat usually, but in 2016 Donald Trump managed to win that county. You know, is that without Donald Trump at the top of the ballot, it'd be interesting to see whether Republicans are able to hold that county. Another county that I think is worth looking at is Duval County, which is Jacksonville. Republicans have carried that county in each of the last five elections at the top of the ticket. It's gone for the Republican presidential candidate or the Republican governor nominee, but some of those elections have been very close, and Duval has a mix of conservative Republican voters, and it also has a fairly large African American population. And so, in this election, it'll be very interesting to see where Duval winds up. So that would be one of the counties to look at on election night.
The Jags aren't doing so well, so maybe you know, voting is.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm more interested.
Football correlation. So that's John Kennedy. Any counties that you'll be having an eye on on Tuesday?
Well, I think for Republicans, a couple of counties to watch are Martin and Walton counties. These are, you know, far apart, but they are also decidedly Republican dominated. But both have had issues with Rick Scott. A lot of Martin County voters were angered by another summer season of blue-green algae fouling their waterways, you know, closing businesses and keeping people from the beach. And then just as the Gulf Coast was dealing with the red tide, Martin County was the epicenter of this algae problem. Comes from water discharged from Lake Okeechobee to lower the risk of flooding there. Martin County voters, there was a sign that they were maybe sending a message to Scott in the August primary. The governor had token opposition in his bid for the Republican Senate nomination, running against a frequent candidate, Rocky De La Fuente. Of course, Rocky only got 11% of the vote statewide, but in Martin, De La Fuente almost doubled that. He got 20.5% of the vote. And then similarly, miles away in Walton County, another Republican hotbed, De La Fuente had his second best showing. He got 20% of the Republican vote there. Now, Walton is where Scott has been ridiculed for signing a beach private property law that has angered residents and led to huge protests and fears that property owners could close big stretches of the beach to the public. So anyway, highlighting how, you know, risky it is to rile Floridians who want to go to the beach, Andrew Gillum, the Democrat running against Ron DeSantis for governor this week, he drew a crowd to an event in Destin which is seen as, you know, never seen as a Democratic friendly turf. And Gillum, though, is saying that, you know, he's there to show people that he was sympathetic to their cause about preserving beach access. He would support repealing that private property measure that was signed into law by Scott. And he told people, he says, I want to be their governor, too. So in a tight race, if Gillum could even slightly soften his losing margin in Martin or Walton County, that could prove decisive statewide.
Okay. Well, there's just a couple of things to, and again, I did encourage folks to take notes. So just a few things to look for as the election results start coming in on Tuesday. But I hear some music playing again, I think. It's time to return to our Pick a Number segment. John Kennedy, I remember you had the highest number. I believe it was, what, 229?
I came in pretty big on this. It's 229 million. I hate to sound like I've gone over these numbers before for this podcast, but again, it's what has been spent on TV in the Florida governor's race and Senate race. This is according to the Wesleyan Media Project, which has been tracking ad spending. The Gillum DeSantis governor's race tops the nation. It's got $133 million on TV. And the Senate race, Scott versus Nelson, $96 million, highest in the nation as well. You know, of course, that $229 million combined doesn't even include what's been spent on congressional races, legislative races, ballot initiatives, soil and water, conservation districts, everything else that voters are voting on this fall in Florida. But, you know, when you want to look at what would $229 million buy you, it's about $30 million more than what the state will spend on Everglades restoration. It's about this year. It's about seven times what it'll spend on Alzheimer's research and care, and about double what it spends on affordable housing. So whoever wins this governor's race after all that spending, then they can begin the process of nickel and diming over the state budget.
Very strong contribution to the Pick a Number segment, John. Thank you for that. Zach Anderson came in with a 51.
51 was the voter turnout in the last midterm election in Florida in 2014. 51% of registered voters turned out. I think most political observers, election supervisors, they think that turnout is on track to beat that. It's already at 26%, so already more than half of what we saw in 2014. The highest turnout that we've seen in a midterm in the last few decades is 66% back in 1994. Will we get that high? It's hard to say. In general, you would think that higher turnout would benefit Democrats. They tend to have more infrequent voters, but there's no guarantee of that. And we see Republicans turning out at higher rates right now.
There you go. So 51%. See, I'm guessing that this turnout will beat that, but we'll see what happens. Well, my number was the number four. Four is the number of losing Democratic gubernatorial candidates that Jimmy Buffett has performed for in Florida over the last 20 years. He has done concerts for Buddy McKay in 1998, Bill McBride in 2002. He did a fundraiser for Alex Sink in 2010. And this past August, he did a free concert for Gwen Graham before the Democratic primary. All those folks lost, but he is going to be back at it with a fifth candidate and hoping to avoid the golden sombrero. Jimmy Buffett will be performing in West Palm Beach for Andrew Gillum and also Bill Nelson to see if he can break his gubernatorial curse. Well, that does it for today's show. We hope you've enjoyed our podcast. It's always my honor to be your host. I'm George Bennett from the Palm Beach Post. I've been joined here in Sarasota by the Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor, Zach Anderson, and also in Tallahassee by John Kennedy, the Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau chief. We've been assisted, even though I'm not in West Palm Beach, the team of Forzano has been working there. That's Thomas Cordy and Joe Forzano. And of course, in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, the man behind the curtain, Adam Fish. Thank you.